This podcast was recorded Thursday, October 1st at 10:37 a.m. Things might have changed by the time you hear it.
Yeah, like President Trump will apologize to Joe Biden and the American people for breaking the rules and being rude during this week's debate.
Let's talk politics. This is Snolly Goster, WOSU Public Media's weekly look at Ohio politics and those shrewd, self-serving politicians who call each other names and do not let the others finish their sentences. I'm Steve Brown.
And I'm Mike Thompson. Coming up later in the podcast, the latest on how you can and cannot cast a ballot in Ohio. But first...
Folks, do you have any idea what this clown's doing?
You don't have it in your blood. You could have never done that.
Why does he do it?
Because you weren't president screwing things up.
You were a senator.
You're the worst president America has ever had.
Hey, you're almost the lowest in your class. Don't ever use the word smart with me.
The question is, radical left.
Will you shut up, man?
Listen, who is on your list?
You got all that? What in the world? It was an argument that Cleveland had not seen since the last time the Browns and Steelers played a meaningful game in the old Muni Stadium.
Yes, no, it was not drunk football fans, but the two men who want to be sworn in as President of the United States in January. And like most senseless arguments, one participant was more obnoxious than the other, and that would be President Trump, who constantly broke the rules, interrupted Joe Biden, and made numerous false statements. Of course, Biden did not come out completely clean. He called the President of the United States a clown and told him to shut up, as you just heard.
Yeah, the clown thing I don't want to side with. I think shut up, we all sort of yelled at our TV. Just not to take a political stance, but just to allow political opinions to come forward. I mean, President Trump was being so obstructive to the whole process that now we have a debate commission considering new rules.
Yeah, good luck with that. Yeah, it was very frustrating to watch. I don't think we were completely surprised that Donald Trump was aggressive. I think we were surprised by how aggressive he was and just totally steamrolling, bulldozing. We've heard all these adjectives all week. The rules, the moderator, Joe Biden, and we never could get – we had to dig hard to get policy, you know, to get responses.
There was very little.
To COVID, to the economy, to health insurance going forward, to Supreme Court nominations, and whether Joe Biden wants to pack the court. We never got an answer to that. And part of it was Joe Biden didn't want to answer it, and part of it was Donald Trump wouldn't let him.
Yeah, my thoughts and condolences go out to Chris Wallace. I mean, what a unforgiving assignment. What a really thankless job to try to rein that.
He couldn't.
No,
I've moderated many debates.
Yeah.
He could not do anything differently other than tell the president to shut up. That's the only thing.
Well, Joe Biden did that for him.
The only thing the moderator could have done is to scream at him. And you're not going to do that. He's the president of the United States. Chris Wallace was playing by the rules, and one of the participants didn't want to. And I've been in debate settings like that, and you are in a no-win situation. You can't control it in any way. And frankly, cutting off the mics is not going to work unless they're in two separate rooms, because you're still going to hear the other person. I don't know what the solution is.
Somehow in October of 2020, there are still some undecided voters in this race. This really did nothing for them other than probably alienate them to the president. I don't know what an undecided voter could have learned from this debate other than the personalities of the two men on stage.
No, I mean, 538 did an analysis of – in their polling analysis shows that clear majority of folks thought Joe Biden won the debate, did better than Donald Trump. But it didn't change anyone's minds. It didn't change who they were going to vote for. It didn't change the matter who they thought was going to win the election. The danger is, and we heard some undecided voters on NPR and other outlets saying, this is going to cause me not to vote. And I just hope that's not the strategy that the Trump campaign is using, is to suppress the vote. It could very well be that, because turnout will help. A lower turnout will certainly help him, because his base will come out. But if it's suppressing the turnout and people are so turned off by politics, that's almost worse. I'll be honest.
I don't know how many people that would be. A huge swath of this country thinks Donald Trump did a great job.
Yeah.
I know that polls say that most people seem to think Joe Biden did a better job. Donald Trump's base was not at all alienated by his performance. I mean, they want this attack dog. Yeah. They want this guy in negotiations with the leaders of North Korea, with Iran. They want this man as their president. And again, I'm not casting judgment either way. This is what they value. They think this is an aggressive they would call it assertive, that he's a strong leader.
And an equal amount of hardcore opponents were appalled.
Mm-hmm.
But the election will not be decided by those two groups.
It's going to be decided by a few counties and a few Midwestern states.
No, it's folks in the middle. You know? Yeah.
As we mentioned, President Trump's display at the debate was the latest example of how he has lost the support of many moderate Republicans. While some of those Republicans are just sitting out elections and not voting for Trump, others are taking action. We've heard of the Lincoln Project, a national group of Republicans actively campaigning against Trump, and you may have seen their digital ads on social media.
Ohio has a version of that. It's called Operation Grant, named for the Civil War general and former president and Ohio native Ulysses Grant. And joining us now is Phil Heimlich. He's a Republican, former Cincinnati council member, Hamilton County Commissioner, and assistant prosecutor, and he's among those disgruntled GOP leaders who have helped form Operation Grant. Phil Heimlich, welcome to Snollygoster.
Guys, thanks. Good to be with you.
Let's start with, what is Operation Grant? How was it formed? When was it formed?
Operation Grant is the Ohio affiliate of the Lincoln Project and Republican Voters Against Trump, both of which are the leading national organization of Republicans that are supporting Biden for president. I think you know the Lincoln Project was founded by George Conway and Bill Kristol. They're the ones that have had very, very powerful and moving ads opposing Trump and supporting Biden. And Republican Voters Against Trump, you've probably seen theirs. They are relying more on testimonials from everyday Republicans that are saying, I made a mistake. I have remorse. I'm voting for Biden this election. We're their affiliate. The difference is they're doing more national spots that go all over the country. We are focusing on Ohio and holding events throughout Ohio. In fact, every major city in Ohio we will be in or have been in holding events to encourage Republicans to put country over party, to be patriots and not partisans. That's the way we describe it. And to put the party label aside and admit this man is corrupt, he's unprincipled, he is dishonest, and now we know that he's a lousy businessman too. We're saying, look, do what you want in your local elections, but be principled and vote for Biden for the benefit of the country. We started, I would say, about 4 or 5 months ago, and we're very grateful that we've gotten a lot of attention, media attention, fundraising, things like that. So we're very excited about having an impact and helping Joe Biden win in Ohio.
Phil, Donald Trump really has not changed. I can remember when he announced his campaign, he said he wanted to put a stop to all Muslims, as he said, entering the country until we can figure out what the hell is going on. This is the same guy that campaigned and won the Electoral College 4 years ago. What has changed within people like you? It seems like people who voted for Trump supported this behavior in 2016, but now don't?
Well, let me be honest. I'm a former prosecutor as well as having been a city councilman and a county commissioner in Cincinnati. And the kind of cases I tended to focus on were what we call white collar cases, especially dealing with con men. OK, I dealt with a lot of con men and I know a con man when I see it. I voted for Hillary Clinton, who I despise and always have. But okay, I still voted for her because I could see this guy was a con man. OK, and I don't want a con man running the country, all right? He ran all his businesses in the ground, and yet he pretends that he's a successful business guy. We know that's not true. As far as other Republicans go, our other leaders of Operation Grant, I would say, did vote by and large for Trump. But I think they had hopes that perhaps he'd shake things up. Perhaps he'd kind of turn Washington upside down in a good way. But basically what they found is, he's a liar. He's a crook. He's basically in league with Vladimir Putin. He never told us when he ran before that he was having a bromance with Putin. He never said that he loved dictators like Duterte and Erdogan. He praises murderous dictators and turns his back on our allies. Now, if there's one thing that Republicans have stood for, I would say, is a tough foreign policy, especially standing up to Russia. Who could imagine a Republican president would support Vladimir Putin over our own intelligence agencies? So I think there's been a lot of evidence that's come forward in the last 3 years that's caused Republicans to say, I've had enough of this guy.
One of the things that Republicans, you mentioned foreign policy and national security, a big mainstay of the Republican Party and a strong reason why they support their candidates. But they also support lower taxes, appointing conservative judges, and a strong economy. And before the pandemic, the stock market was booming. Unemployment was at an all-time low. Many folks credit the Trump tax cut. And he's appointed scores of conservative judges to the federal court system. He's about to win confirmation of his third conservative justice to the U.S. Supreme Court. These things are things that conservatives like yourself, I assume, like. But it's not worth it in your mind, correct?
I think that's a good statement. But let me say, I don't disagree with everything Trump's done. For example, I've been a big supporter for many years of school choice. I started two charter schools in Cincinnati. So do I like that he supports charter schools and school choice? Absolutely. So it's not just about issues. In fact, it's less about issues. And as you just said, it is about integrity. I would much prefer an honest liberal Democrat over a corrupt conservative Republican. Now, let's be clear, though. Calling him a conservative, I don't call him a conservative Republican. First of all, I'm kind of an old-fashioned Republican, meaning I believe in balanced budgets, okay? I don't believe in bankrupting the Treasury with tax cuts. I don't think that's a conservative principle. Before the virus happened, he was running a $1 trillion deficit. That makes what Obama did look like small change. And now with the virus, he's like over $2 trillion a year, passing debt on to future generations. Do you remember when Obama had passed his deficits? Oh, my gosh. Every one of my fellow Republicans was talking how terrible it was. He's passing debt on to our grandchildren. Well, they don't seem to care too much when Donald Trump does it. You know, what's with Rob Portman, our United States Senator, who, by the way, I want to say was always helpful to me, a great friend in my political career. So I don't want to sound like I'm kind of stabbing in the back. But the fact is, he's disappeared. Okay, he has not shown any level of conscience. He has not had the integrity to stand up as he should have. And people like Jordan and the others, I mean, these guys are the equivalent of the Republicans that supported Joe McCarthy in the 50s.
What do you make of Republicans like that who choose to say nothing, even though they very much likely disagree with the president? Let's take Governor DeWine, for example. He's not in Washington, so he's not part of the federal government as far as accountability and things like that. But for months, he's been using science to guide his orders to fight COVID. Nearly all of them are in direct contrast to the president's statements. The president constantly undermines the governor's message. It turns Ohioans, some Ohioans, against the governor. But yet Mike DeWine will not openly, even mildly, disagree with the president of the United States.
He said he did a great job in the debate.
Yes.
He tweeted that out.
What do you make of that?
Yeah. Well, first of all, let me say, I think Governor DeWine has and I had the privilege of serving with his son, by the way, is now in the Ohio Supreme Court. Pat and I were on city council together and county commission together. But so I kind of go back a ways. I think Mike DeWine's done a great job on the COVID. I think he showed a lot of integrity, so I give him credit for that. But with all due respect, he and Rob Portman epitomize that phrase by Edmund Burke that says the only thing necessary for evil to succeed is for good men to do nothing. Rob Portman, Mike DeWine, they're good men, but they've done nothing. And they've done nothing in the sense that they have, frankly, been cowards. They know better. These are intelligent men. They know what a demagogue this guy is, and they have chosen to remain silent. And I agree with George Will, the conservative columnist, who said not only does Trump need to lose, but his enablers need to lose too, because they are complicit in his dishonesty. They are complicit in his corruption. If you remain silent in the face of that kind of behavior, you are guilty as well.
Well, Phil, the president is so popular among his base that speaking out could effectively end political careers. Are you confident with that? I mean, I don't know your political ambitions, if you still want to run for office again in the future. Are you and other supporters of this Operation Grant and the Lincoln Project, are you hoping that President Trump loses and the party turns back to normal? Because I would think the future ambitions of the anti-Trump Republicans would be really cloudy if he wins again.
Well, there's no question. The reason why somebody like Senator Portman or Governor DeWine won't speak up is they're scared. They're scared. They know that if they have the guts to speak out against Trump's abuses, their political future is probably shot. It's true. They're scared of a primary opponent. Rob Portman knows that if he even makes the slightest criticism of Trump, that he'll get a primary. He'll get a nasty tweet from Trump, and the next time he runs, especially if he ran for president, much less for a senator, that Trump will derail because he'll have a primary opponent and he'll be like Jeff Flake. And I'm sure these guys rationalize, oh, well, you know, I'm doing good behind the scenes, or I can do more good if I stay in office. Yeah, sure. I think the best analogy, and you guys being political geeks will probably appreciate this. I think the best analogy is in the early 50s with Joe McCarthy, who I think, by the way, if you have to pick a historical figure that is most like Trump, that's the guy. A liar, a demagogue, and yet motivated a large minority of the country by targeting mostly innocent people. Margaret Chase Smith, who was the senator from Maine, she issued at that time as a Republican what she called a declaration of conscience, joined by six other United States senators who were Republicans. And they stood up and opposed McCarthy's dishonesty, his abuses, and his corruption. How we need that today, how we need that kind of courage in the Republicans in the Congress and the Senate today. But unfortunately, all we have is the people like the Jim Jordans down here in Cincinnati, the Steve Sabbats, that are simply lapdogs for the president.
I would call Jim Jordan an attack.
Margaret Chase Smith.
Jim Jordan's more like a guard dog.
How we need the courage of a Margaret Chase Smith today.
What is the future of the Republican Party, Phil? Will it get back to its traditional self? Has it? You know, Gene Krebs, who was a former state lawmaker who you may know, he's on our shows quite a bit. He fears, because this will be the third straight election where college-educated voters have abandoned the Republican Party, that the GOP may not get them back. Suburban voters are leaving the Republican Party, at least the party of Trump. What is the future of the GOP? Can it come back as it once was? Will it splinter? Will there be now two conservative parties in America?
Well, first of all, I apologize for interrupting you guys. Gene, I think, makes a lot of sense. George Will, who I'll quote again because he's always been a conservative icon, he feels the party essentially needs to implode and we have to rebuild it, as others like Steve Schmidt and others feel. I'll tell you, frankly, I don't even care. I'm a Republican, a lifelong Republican. I don't even care about it, frankly, at this point, because I am more concerned about the country as a whole. Here's what the issue is. If this is a legitimate election, if we can keep the Russians from interfering, if we can keep Trump and Attorney General Barr from messing with the mail-in ballots, hopefully Trump will lose, and then I think things within the party will go back to normal. My greatest fear is that we will end up like the countries that Trump admires, Turkey, Hungary, and others that are led by these kind of dictators that were elected as in a democracy but slowly turn their countries into dictatorships. If Trump can manage to, through Barr's help, to invalidate, let's say, the mail-in votes, if Russia continues to interfere, as our intelligence agencies say they are doing, and they're able to corrupt this election, and Trump is able to stay in power, frankly, I think the only way he can do it is through one of those methods. That is the real fear. Then the Republican Party ends up becoming like the Communist Party in China or one of these one-party countries that we see going on around the world. You know, one of the scariest quotes, Madeleine Albright was quoting Mussolini, and Mussolini said, the way you get rid of democracy is like plucking a chicken, one feather at a time. And that is what I fear most. What happens to the Republican Party, mm-hmm. Frank? I could care less.
Phil Heimlich, the founder of Operation Grant. That is a group of, I think we would say, disgruntled Republicans voting against President Trump in the upcoming election.
Patriotic Republicans, my preference.
Okay, Phil Heimlich, thank you again for joining Snollygoster. We'll be right back.
Is there something you've always wondered about Columbus? Like,
how did Circleville get its name?
Does Columbus have an accent?
How much has the NRA donated to Ohio lawmakers?
What happened to passenger rail in Columbus?
Curious Seabus is WOSU series that investigates questions submitted by you, our listeners. What have you always wondered about Columbus? Submit a question you're curious about today at WOSU.org/curious.
Welcome back to Snollygoster from WOSU Public Media. As we record this, voting begins in less than a week. We're almost there, but there's still a lot of confusion out there about just how to get a ballot and then how to cast it.
All right, so here's the latest for any of you who are still confused. If you have not registered to vote or if you have moved, you have until October 5th to register or change your address.
That sounds easy. Now, if you want to vote early, despite some legal challenges, the system has not changed. So to vote by mail, you have to fill out an application and then send it to your local board of elections. That application is for an absentee ballot. If you did not get an application in the mail, you can print one online. You cannot email that form in, though. A judge made that ruling this week.
If you want to vote early in person, you can start on October 6th. Just go to your local Board of Elections office, check your website to see where that is. In Franklin County in Central Ohio, for instance, it's on Morris Road. But check, there are 88 counties. They each have their own spot. So check your county Board of Elections.
If you are relying on the mail-in ballot, as we just talked about, once you get the ballot that you applied for, you have until the day before the election to mail it in. You have to pay for the postage yourself.
Check the instructions to make sure you know how many stamps you need.
That's right. And make sure that your signature matches the one you used back when you registered to vote, because they have a matching system. And if the signature appears to be different, it will get flagged. And then you can drop your ballot off also at the Board of Elections office. No drop boxes, though.
There's one drop box at the Board of Election. No drop boxes spread around counties.
That's what I meant to say.
Yes.
As of now,
it's hard to keep up,
there are still lawsuits pending about that.
Yes, as things may have changed.
Both in federal and local court.
We do have a nifty guide to help you cast your ballot and to help you choose your candidates and issues. It's the WOSU Voter Guide. It's online. Here's the address, WOSU.org/voter guide.
So now, to hell with all that niceness. Let's get to the Snollygoster of the Week Award. That's what we use to recognize, to honor the shrewdest political move of the week.
Yes. So, as you may have heard, Governor DeWine continues to draw fire from a select few conservative Republicans in the Ohio legislature. The latest came this week when State Rep. John Becker demanded criminal charges, lock him up. He demanded they be filed against DeWine over his public health orders.
And the county prosecutor said,
No.
The request was dead. It wouldn't happen. But the stunt prompted the following response from DeWine's spokesman, Dan Tierney. Quote, if this were serious, I would have a comment. Because it is patently absurd, I do not.
That's a great quote. It's a terrific no comment comment, kind of like a non-denial denial. But terrific quote that was spread far and wide in all the publications we read this week. So for that, Dan Tierney gets our Snollygoster of
and
the Week
Dan,
award.
I think Dan is the first spokesman to earn this award. Usually goes straight to the person themselves, but no. Dan's stepping forward to take one for the team.
Yes, very shrewd.
Congrats, Dan. If you have a suggestion for next week's award, you can email it to snollygoster@wosu.org. And you can also tell your friends about us, give us a good review on iTunes, whatever you have to do. Just spread the word of mouth. We're always out there looking for new listeners, new subscribers. Thanks, as always, to our audio producer, Eric French, to our student producer, Jack Long, and to our web producer, Michael DeBonis. Until next week, I'm Steve Brown.
And I'm Mike Thompson for Snollygoster from WOSU Public Media.